Broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, this is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Lizette Beard, and I'm here with my co-hosts Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver. In today's podcast, we are continuing our conversation about Bible engagement, pulling from a little bit of our research that we did on Americans and their Bible reading habits and views, but also looking at some other research that we've done in the past on the real impact that Bible reading has. But to kick off, let's talk a little bit about just reading. One of the things I noticed in our project that we did on why people have not read the Bible, 9% said that they don't read books. And so that's just a real kind of issue. If they're not a reader, then reading the Bible, not something they're going to do. What kind of book readers are you? What do you like to read? Just throw it on out there. Let's let the listeners get to know us in our super personal, folksy kind of way.
I'm actually a very slow reader, and so I probably read less than I did when I was younger. As a young person, I read a lot of biographies. I like to understand, you know, a lot about people's lives. Today, I tend to tune in more to people who understand things, and I can learn from their insights. And so, a Malcolm Gladwell or somebody who's describing a culture or a way of thinking, I'm going to dig into to those books a little more.
Okay. How about you, Casey?
Some of it, I think I read some in just the spiritual growth kind of encouragement type of space, so books talking about living for God type of books. I think I also read a lot of articles that are in that space. I just go on, Christianity Today or wherever, and I read a lot of articles. I think with a lot of books, I think I'm a reader who starts reading books. I'm someone who I've probably half read, 50 books that I'm currently kind of like, oh, I want to go back and finish that at some point. So it's one of those things where I feel like it's easy for me to put something aside and then say, I'll come back to it. So that's something I'm working on a little bit, is trying to be somebody who I'm going to read through this and, decide that I'm going to do that and keep doing
it. But, sometimes if a book's not very good, which I'm not saying about the Bible, I'm talking about other books, but sometimes it's okay to just let that go. I'd break into Let It Go from Frozen, but I don't think that would work out very well.
Yeah, once you get the main point, why keep reading? They have to be giving you something compelling to keep it going, and that's why, to me, some of those biographies or those narratives, there's a reason to finish. You want to know the rest of the story.
Right.
But some of the teaching books, sometimes it's easy to go, I think I got your main point.
Right.
And set it down.
Yeah. When I was working on my master's, actually, my reading bone broke and I switched over to audiobooks. And so now I can pretty much listen to anything and enjoy I can't say wide variety, because I'm still in this series of school doing a lot of regular reading, but I have found that comedy audiobooks can just be really nice to kind of break that, or spiritual encouragement audiobooks. I felt like I needed to work in something since Casey was being the godly one. I thought I need some bonus points in this area, but...
I would agree. As I'm looking for time to read, sometimes it's like a long drive or something seems like the right time, and I can't read and drive at the same time, or at least I shouldn't.
And so I don't even want to know.
So that's been what's driven me to listen to some audiobooks. And of course, with even Bible apps nowadays, you pull up YouVersion, and right at the bottom is a play button. And oh, by the way, you can switch it to any language you want. So if you meet somebody who speaks another language, you can show them that their language is right there and the word is just a click away.
Okay, now this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but I actually find that reading in French if it is something like in the Bible, if I'm having trouble concentrating because I'd learned French to go overseas, I studied French before I went overseas. I learned French while I was overseas. But it actually, because I have to focus my attention so much that it is almost like I can focus better and get more out of the text in reading French. Anyway, that's a complete side, but bonus information. So one of the questions we had in the research was, how have you typically approached reading the Bible on your own? And I'm going to just spitball here and guess that, Scott, you're systematic.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit, I mean, not to divulge a whole bunch of your personal, but what's systematic for you?
I mean, it's changed over time, but for a good while now, I'll read through a book of the Bible at a time. And I've been kind of alternating between the New and the Old Testament. So I'm in the book of Amos right now. And I don't require myself to read a chapter or more in a day. And so today it was half a chapter. It was kind of, you know, reading enough until I got a thought. I got, you know, I saw something. I felt like I was hearing a complete thought about, you know, God's relationship with Israel at that time.
So how are you enjoying Amos? Because Casey and I had a conversation the other day that I've recently just really come to a good place with the minor prophets.
What did they ever do to you?
I know, but they always seemed, I think this goes back to what we mentioned in a previous podcast. It was, they always seemed really whiny. You know, it was a little melodramatic. And I get that that's my problem, not their problem, because they had reason. But seeing the story, I've just to a place where when I was going through those at the end of last year, I can honestly say it was the first really personally meaningful time through there. So
I find that most books of the Bible, I may dread them going in, but they come to life once I'm in there. And, you know, I often look for the descriptors, you know, okay, it's pretty clear God's mad at Israel. What are the descriptors? Why? You know, and are any of those true of me? And, you know, to see a verse today where it's saying in chapter 5 that that you say that I'm with you, but the implication that God's giving right there is that he's not, because they're not seeking him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just that wake-up call, you know, am I or are we going through the motions saying God's with us when in fact we're not actually seeking him, so he's not that close?
As I was thinking about that, the systematic and the benefits that come with that, and maybe who's typically systematic, I'm coming to the assumption, because I've not done this, my hypothesis is that listeners to a podcast dedicated to research on church and culture would probably tend to be the people who would land more on the systematic side of reading than just the flip open method. Is that, would you?
I don't know. They might be listening to these out of order. You know, they're tuning into the ones that look interesting.
Right. That's fair. That's fair. The responses in the data that were actually more popular than systematic were look up things when I have a need and look at verses suggested by others. And what stood out to me is that those are situational. Yeah. It's what's going on around them. And that's what's driving people and quite possibly very faithful people. I think in here when I have a need, Christians more likely to select, and those with evangelical beliefs are more likely to select that than those without evangelical beliefs. If you're a leader, and anyone can jump in here, but if what can we say, or what insights do we see from this to help shape the perspective of our listeners who may be systematic and may be trying to, their goal is let's get everybody to be systematic, but other folks are in a different space.
I mean, I guess just an awareness of that, the fact that they are, I think that's a good first step, because, you know, like you said, I think we might think, oh, if you have these beliefs, if you have evangelical beliefs, that means that you you say the Bible is the highest authority for what you believe. So you're probably, you know, working your way through the whole of Scripture and trying to say, like, well, how does this, you know, apply to me? What is this saying? You know, how is God speaking to me in that? How do I make this an authority over me? Am I listening to that? But we saw, you know, even with that group, it's only half of them who are saying they're systematically reading through every day. So even just that first step of awareness of saying, oh, you know, I have people in a space other than where I'm trying to get them to, instead of just assuming, well, they say this is important, so they must be doing it.
And we also see from our research that many Christians and definitely many Americans have not read the whole Bible, and so they haven't heard the whole message. In fact, just under half of Americans say they've read half or more of the Bible, but just 1 out of 5 Americans say they've read all of it. And, you know, just reading a passage once, you often don't catch everything that's going on. And so, you know, that, and as you read it again, you're in a different place in your life. And so it can have new meaning and relate, you can relate to that passage in different ways. And so, you know, I think people who are not reading systematically, they're not in the Bible on a regular basis, are missing out on a lot of the richness that's there.
Casey, one of the answers that we saw, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but one of the reasons people gave for why they haven't read the Bible more is they don't see how it relates to them. I think that's problematic. You know, if you want, if a leader or someone in ministry wants to impact people and get them excited about it, what do we know from previous research that ties in the impact or that reading the Bible actually does?
Yeah, I mean, we absolutely know that it does relate to them, you know, obviously just from a theological perspective, but also, you know, in our research we see that overall reading the Bible is the number one predictor of spiritual maturity. So when people, this is from our transformational church discipleship research, that we see that when people are reading the Bible, you know, that in a number of different attributes, from obeying God and denying self to seeking God, to being unashamed, to believing sound doctrine, and even in the attributes where it's not a direct influence, we're still seeing, you know, things related to reading the Bible. So studying the Bible or being in a Bible study group, how those things are really pushing people onward and predict some really positive spiritual maturity outcomes.
Now, when you say attribute, what's an attribute?
So, I mean, just I guess we're sort of building a variable there, saying, yeah, well, here are a few items, questions that are related, and so we're saying, you know, all of these are about some underlying, you know, that's why I'm saying attribute, that
right
thing that's the underlying variable below. Okay, we asked a couple of questions, but these are all really about this thing.
And don't get grouchy with me, because here's the next question: what's a variable?
A variable is
totally psyched that you're paused. Okay. Would it be a thing you can measure or thing that can be counted?
I don't want to use the word thing because I know people don't like when the word thing is in.
Thing is
okay.
Great.
It's a thing that can have different values, right? So it could be yes or no. It could be 1, 2, or 3. Something that takes on multiple values. That's a variable.
So, Scott, you were more involved in this project. Would you say attribute? Would you feel comfortable saying characteristic when we're talking about these things, characteristics or qualities?
Yeah, it's an area of following Christ, kind of a descriptive area. And the way they took shape is kind of what Casey was talking about, is there's an underlying pattern of actually several elements that make up that attribute. And so yes, a variable, an element is a data point. It's something we can ask somebody specifically if it's something they believe, if it's something they do, if it's something they desire to do. And so as we ask about those things, we get some variables to work with, and that's when Casey does his magic.
All right. Oh, his magic is all important. My magic, if you heard the other podcast, is manipulation. Now, so back to Casey, what you were talking about, those are really important things that you're talking about, those characteristics, those attributes.
Mm-hmm.
But going back, which of the following describe the Bible 35% in our survey of Americans said the Bible is life-changing. Well, it's easy to think, well, okay, that's probably the Christians or that's probably the whatever. But when you look at the breakdown that you did, 46% of Christians, Christians are more likely to select the Bible is life-changing than other religions and non-religious. But that's still at 46%. So am I correct in understanding that that means 54% of Christians said, nah, I'm not going to check that?
Yeah, and it's a little tricky sometimes with select all questions. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where sometimes if people have already checked two or three, they might feel like, okay, well, I've covered my bases a little bit. I've, you know, some of these other ones describe it better maybe than life-changing. Maybe they felt like good source of morals, which, again, I'm not sure not sure that's the ideal response, but we saw that that's something that people selected a lot, and I think it is that as well. But I think sometimes people feel like in a select all, I'm going to check these ones that feel like they're the best descriptors rather than yes, no on every single one. If they didn't select this, they definitely don't feel, you know, they would say it's not life-changing. You know, but
anything else that you saw in this other research on the change or the results that we saw in people reading the Bible?
Well, I think just kind of getting back to, you know, the idea of like, well, what are we actually talking about when we say this predicts, you know, it's the number one predictor of spiritual maturity. I think that can sound confusing to people. So just the idea that these are related, and we know that it's not exactly like it's not a completely independent-dependent sort of relationship where, oh, if we just get them to do this thing, then all the other stuff works itself out. There's something kind of cyclical that happens in a lot of these, you know, where, okay, hey, if they're reading the Bible, then they're becoming a little bit more unashamed of their faith and that, or they're seeking God a little bit more. And then, you know, as God's working in their lives, they're saying, oh, now they're feeling really convicted and compelled, like, oh, I really want to read the Bible more. So it's not all just, you know, we can't look at one and say that, you know, in the, you know, that the other ones aren't being affected or, you know, it's not all cause and effect there, but we see that the people who are reading the Bible, all that other stuff does seem to be happening at higher levels as well.
Now, you say predict. Are you using witchcraft when you...
I can't say yes because we're on a Lifeway podcast.
Right. That is correct. So. That would be the incorrect answer. So, but predicting, that's a bold statement.
Sure. So we've got some response variable. Again, I'm going to try to say it. So we've got this thing, this variable that we're trying to predict. So we're saying, you know, are you doing this thing or not? If it's a yes or no type of thing, or maybe how often are you doing this thing? And we say, well, there are a lot of other variables, a lot of other things that could help explain whether that's happening or not happening, or how often it's happening, or, you know, whatever we're trying to predict there. So when we're using, you know, we're using regression there to be able to say, and some model selection to be able to say, well, of all of these potential explanatory variables, here's the ones that help explain whether that thing is happening or not best. And what we saw over and over again was reading the Bible kind of rising to the top there as being the most predictive, even in the presence of several other variables of spiritual maturity.
All right. I'm going to have you break that down a little bit. Regression and then model selection. Pretend, I'm not going to say me because I was a little too self-deprecating in earlier podcasts that made it sound like I was mentally impaired. But pretend there's a 10-year-old here. Mm-hmm. And I'm, again, not implying our listeners are 10-year-olds, but, you know, you have a master's in stats.
Right.
So.
We know we have listeners with varied backgrounds
right.
in terms of
so,
how old they...
So talk, why is regression important? Because I hear you guys saying that all the time.
I mean, it's just a tool, and sometimes it's the best tool, and other times there are other tools kind of in your toolkit that work better. But what that tool does is you're saying, hey, we really want to know, you know, we want to see how other things relate to this one thing, right? This one thing that we care about, you know. So we care about are they obeying God in all of these different ways. We care about that, you know. What relates to that, you know, and we might look at correlations and we might say, oh, well, you know, when this thing's higher, this other thing is higher. And we could say that for, you know, 100 other things that we looked at. So then instead of just being left with in that place of saying, oh, there are a lot of things that seem like they go up and down at the same time obeying God goes up and down, that model selection piece is being able to say, well, in the presence of these other things, you know, so even once we know, you know, are they involved in service or not? Even once we know, are they, I don't know, you know, are they taking these other action steps? Still, even knowing all of that, reading the Bible still matters a lot.
So when you're measuring all those things, mm-hmm. and you've got all the things in a bucket, reading the Bible bubbles up as really important.
Right. Yeah. So you'd say, hey, you know, yeah, even if we know all these other things, reading the Bible still matters. Once we know reading the Bible, maybe some of those other relationships we see are sort of more spurious or conditional upon, oh, you know, really this thing we see correlates well with obeying God is really just because it also is something that people who read the Bible are also more prone to do. So it's sort of through reading the Bible that those things are related. And so that gets thrown out, the model selection, and the ones that matter the most wind up kind of rising to the top.
And I think that makes our recent data even more important, because if Bible reading is this important, if it can have this impact on your life spiritually, so many different areas of your spiritual life, then when we see that only 49% of those with evangelical beliefs, and to have evangelical beliefs, it means that you're saying that the Bible's the highest authority for what I believe. So only 49% of people with evangelical beliefs are actually reading the Bible systematically. We only see a little more than 4 out of 10 evangelicals saying they've actually read all of the Bible ever in their life. And so when we see that disconnect, I think it's a bit of a wake-up call for pastors, because you know, this is one of the key elements of being engaged in the church, being engaged in following Christ, and we're seeing a gap where what we're saying needs to be done and what people are actually doing is a big gap. And I think it's a wake-up call that engagement isn't always what we want it to be. And we can't assume that what we're wanting is what's actually happening. We actually have to ask. We need to ask people if they're engaged and on what level. Because we'll often hear a couple amens when we share a truth in church, but silence is not affirmation. In our culture today, silence is politeness. And so, there's an element in which, people aren't necessarily saying that scripture reading is bad, but they're not on board as far as I'm ready to, I'm doing it. And I think a lot of times we miss that. And I think for other ministry leaders, the same implication is there, that your followers, your employees, your donors may not be as engaged as you think they are. And if you don't have some metrics, if you don't have some questions that you're asking to see how engaged they really are in your mission and in some of the actions your mission is built upon, you're not going to know how pervasive that is. And even though that may be your main message, you know, if your ministry is sharing the gospel verbally, how many people are actually doing that? If your ministry is rectifying injustices, you know, how many people are actually engaging in that? And if you don't have those metrics, if you're not asking those questions, we can assume the engagement is much, much higher than it actually is.
I think one of the things that's good news, I mean, all of this is good news because it's the Bible. See what I did there? That there are things that we're talking about, the Bible influencing, Bible reading influencing other areas of discipleship and spiritual growth. But we also saw in that study that there's areas of spiritual growth that impact higher Bible engagement. And some of those included within the area of Bible engagement, obviously reading and studying the Bible were the top ones. But I thought this one, the third highest impact, confess my sins and wrongdoings to God and ask for forgiveness. So the more likely someone is to do that, then their Bible engagement goes up. And I see that as helping us move outside of the, I don't want to say the coldness of data, because these two people in the room would not think data is cold, but helps us look back and say, okay, there's something going on there when someone is putting themselves before the living and active Word of God, and then they're being transparent, confessing their sins, asking for forgiveness. They're putting themselves in a place for that relationship, that that's what is happening with God. And it's, you know, we can see it, we can observe it, we can measure some of this, but then there's something way beyond what stats or data and research can do. A couple of others that I think are reminders that Bible engagement is also whole life engagement. One of the things from our transformational discipleship study, praying for the spiritual status of people I know who are not professing Christians has an impact. So the more you can encourage people to be doing that, that helps also increase the likelihood of higher Bible engagement. So, you know, I just think whole person prayer, and just more openness to God at work in their lives.
Well, and I think that this is one of those places where I kind of feel like there is that positive feedback loop too, you know. So we want to look at it and say, like, this causes this or this causes this, but I think they cause each other too, you know, that people who are, you know, when you're reading the Bible more, you're convicted of your sin, you're led to confession. When you're confessing your sins, you know, you feel right with God and you feel like that closer relationship to Him, and you're led to His Word. And I feel like you kind of can get into those cycles of, you know, positive feedback happening where this leads to this, which leads to even more of this, you know, like that can happen. And that I think is one of the things we see in here as well, is that idea that these concepts are related, but we think probably related in both directions.
But so, we're not assuring anyone of prosperity gospel, correct?
I'm just kidding. No, we are not. I just think that we're able to say that one of our positive outcomes was not anything related to getting rich. So
yes.
I don't. that one didn't show up in there.
I just didn't want to sound like we were giving a formula for always getting positive outcomes, mm-mm. But that's okay. And also just tormenting you just a little bit. Well, thank you guys. This was good. I hope it was good. We'll actually let the listeners tell us that. We would love your feedback. If you would go in and to iTunes and rate and review, we would appreciate that. Also, give us your feedback via Twitter or Twitter's probably the best place, at S. McCon, at Stats Guy Casey, and at Lizette Beard. And you can find out more about our research if you go to lifewayresearch.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Bye.